Well, joining us for tonight's debate, we have journalist and political commentator Maxine Dauvert joining us from New York, and also editor-in-chief of the Duran.com, Mr. Alexander Mercuris, is joining us from the British capital, London. And let's start off with Ms. Dauvert. Over 2,500 killed and some 3,000 or more bodies are still under the rubble. That's according to Amnesty International's research. What do you have to say about the extent of destruction and death that the U.S.-led coalition caused in Raqqa?
The extent of destruction and death is deeply sad, deeply, deeply regrettable. The fact that it has occurred leaves us with a real question of why it's occurred. If it's occurred because of United States and coalition actions, they need to be explored. The actions need to be stopped, where civilians are the injured ones, even if civilians are not the target. The activity on the ground throughout Syria has been destructive to civilians. The cluster bombs that are being used by the coalition of Russia, Turkey, and the Syrian regime are equally damaging and equally destructive to civilian life. The coalition of Kurds and U.S.-backed troops on the ground, and it's not U.S. troops, it's U.S.-backed troops, where civilians are injured or killed is equally sad. There is no joy from either side, and the Syrian people are the ones in deep, deep sorrow.
Let's bring in Mr. Mercuris from London. This report does say a lot about the double standards that the U.S. and its allies have about civilian casualties. How do you view the findings of this recent report?
Well, first of all, I think we have to accept that this is an extremely reliable report. I mean, there have been lots of things said about Amnesty, but clearly the people who work on the ground, nobody disputes that they do their job well. And I think we can accept that their claims about the thousands of people who were killed in Raqqa are true. Now, the key point for me is not that thousands of people were killed in Raqqa. When you're fighting an organization like Daesh, which uses civilians as human shields, people die. What is for me the big issue is that the coalition for so long has been pretending that only something like 70, whatever it was, people died. Now, that was always obvious nonsense, but we hear this nonsense about coalition forces and what they do and compare that with the enormous amount of criticism that always goes, that always happens whenever we see the Syrian army and the Russian Air Force and its forces carrying out operations against very similar people to Daesh, Al-Qaeda and the rest in people like, in places like Eastern Ghouta, in places like Aleppo and places like that. So when you ask me a question about a double standard, there clearly is a double standard, and it is taking a very long time for people to admit this, and it is concerning, deeply concerning, that this Amnesty report, which, as I said, is reliable, is getting such minimal publicity in the West and in Britain and in the United States.
Maxine Dauvert, an airstrike survivor, one Rasha Badran, has told Amnesty International that, quote, "I don't understand why they bombed us. Didn't the surveillance planes see that we were civilian families?" Unquote. Does Rasha Badran and many other of these airstrike survivors deserve a response from the U.S.-led coalition?
Yes, of course they do, and I think I agree with the accuracy of the Amnesty report. The body number is one that can be checked. The question, of course, is when were these people killed? and whether or not the body count includes those killed earlier. That's not something that's been discussed yet, but I'm sure that it will be. With regard to getting publicity in the West, this is an AP report, an Associated Press report, and AP is one of those news services that is trusted by virtually all media, no matter what its position is, whether it's a right-leaning or a left-leaning or a centrist media. The AP reports are accurate in the main. And certainly the reporters on the ground make every effort to have those reports be accurate. With all of the criticism that's been landed on the media, I think we should make that point and recognize the work of Amnesty International as a researcher of what's going on in the immediate area, and certainly their representatives are taking their own lives in hand. And on the counterbalance, also recognize that the media is responsible and is reporting. The comments of the gentleman who was in the area have been noted, and his questions can't be answered until one gets back to the generals, to the ones who ordered this attack, and find out what they knew and what they didn't know.
Mr. Mercuris, London Amnesty International has also said that the U.S.-led coalition must do more for Syria's quote-unquote smashed Raqqa. A lot of criticism on how the U.S.-led group handled the attacks, but even more criticism on how the coalition didn't handle the aftermath of the assault on the city.
Well, indeed. I mean, if one looks at the pictures of Raqqa, I mean, it is a completely devastated city. The Amnesty report speaks of a city that is 80% destroyed. There is no indication that anything serious is being done to change that. And there doesn't seem to be much interest in doing it. And if I may say, having a report like this published by AP is all very well, but there's not been debates about it in the Security Council. There's not been angry editorials about this in the newspapers. It's not been covered much on the BBC. And of course, the questions about the lack of steps to repair the damage are simply not being asked in any meaningful way. They are not part of the public debate in the West. And on the contrary, what we're hearing coming out of the United States, and this is a widely reported comment by a US official made anonymously, that the United States wants to create a quagmire in Syria for the Russians. In other words, it wants to extend the war there. It doesn't want to cooperate with the official Syrian government to try and repair the damage. And of course, in light of this, there is really little prospect, and it seems not much interest either in genuine reconstruction in Syria. One gets the impression of an enormous amount of destruction done, thousands of people killed, and the United States then walking away.
Mr. Vera, the Amnesty official also said that the coalition, given that they have the money to carry out this very, very expensive military campaign, should have enough money to work with its consequences. The question now is, why haven't they?
Shall I respond?
Indeed.
All right. Why haven't they is an open question. I think that once the October 15th ceasefire and the buffer zone hopefully will be established and accepted both by the regime and the opposition, there will be an opportunity to do at least interim corrections and interim connections of water and electricity in these areas that have been so devastated. And there is very little question that they have indeed been devastated. If there is a cessation of military action, then there will be an opportunity to do a little bit of construction action, to get the simplest water supplies, to reconnect the electricity and get basic ground clearing and construction materials in place so that people can begin to rebuild the lives. There are Syrians all over the world who would like not to be all over the world, but rather to be in their homes and rebuilding. The first step is to get this October 15th deadline met, to get a buffer zone which will not be subject to either Russian coalition or U.S.-backed coalition military destruction.
Mr. Mercurius, in London, interestingly enough, the coalition has given a response that it's a little contrary to what Ms. Devere just said. The coalition says that it wants to work on stabilization in Raqqa, not reconstruction. Can there be one without the other?
No, they cannot be reconstruction.
No, I do not believe so, and I think
stabilization.
Yes, Mr. Mercurius in London, please continue.
Yes, ultimately, if Syria is to be reconstructed, you have to have both. You have to have a degree of political stabilization which extends across the entire country, and you have to have a program of reconstruction, because without the one, the other is impossible. And that, by the way, is both. I mean, it has to be a concerted program to do both. But I think if we come back to the subject of Raqqa specifically, Raqqa is firmly under the control of the forces which delivered it from Daesh, and there has not been meaningful fighting there. So something, it seems to me, could certainly have been done there. I mean, it has been done in other places in Syria. I mean, people that I have spoken to and heard from tell me that there's been a great deal of work, for example, done in Aleppo, in Eastern Ghouta, in all of these other places, because there is an interest in doing these things in these other places. In Raqqa, there doesn't seem to be that interest. And we actually haven't heard much about Raqqa in the West since Daesh was defeated there. It has taken this amnesty report to really bring back our attention to it. And I have to say that it does seem to me that if we are talking about the United States and the coalition, they still seem to me to be far more interested in pursuing political ambitions in Syria involving challenging the Syrian government than in seriously pursuing programs for the reconstruction of the country and for helping the civilians, even in places like Raqqa, which they control and which are now secure.
And Mr. Mercurius, I'm going to stay with you for this question. According to the recent findings, 30,000 houses in Raqqa have been completely destroyed. 25,000 are partially destroyed. About 2,500 bodies have been dug from the rubble. The question that we're focusing on here is, how can the U.S. and its accomplices speak of trying to prevent a catastrophe in Idlib when the devastation of Raqqa that they caused is still so fresh?
Well, indeed, we've been hearing a great deal about the massive destruction in Idlib. I'm going to be straightforward here. I've been following the Syrian war very carefully. I have never seen devastation in any Syrian city caused from bombing, any Syrian city of this scale caused from bombing, of the sort that I have seen in Raqqa. If we look at Aleppo, if we look at the places in East Ghouta, if we look at Deir ez-Zor, certainly there's been much damage there, much of it caused by the various Tahrir groups that gained control there, Daesh and Al-Qaeda and the rest. Some of it undoubtedly caused by bombing and shelling by the Syrian government and the Russians. But I have never seen anything that compares remotely with this lunascape that you see in Raqqa. And I have to say that given that they did this, that the United States Air Force did this on this huge scale, and apparently, if you read through the Amnesty report carefully, on this indiscriminate scale, it absolutely baffles me that they're able to stand up and say that they are concerned to such an extent about the humanitarian situation in Idlib. I think that before they talk about Idlib, they really ought to consider rather more carefully what they have themselves done in Raqqa and what they are not doing in Raqqa to restore the situation there.
Indeed, and Ms. Tavera, New York, your thoughts on what Mr. Mercurius just said?
Look, you have a multifaceted base here. In Raqqa and the surrounding area that's closer to Turkey, there is a Turkish interest in having a harder hand, shall we say, against the Kurdish fighters who are part of the U.S.-backed coalition. And I do want to correct my colleague in London. It's not the U.S. Air Force. It is a U.S.-backed coalition. But the United States Air Force is not flying those sorties. So let's be clear about that. The unwillingness of Turkey to allow open borders in that area so that civilians can escape the military action adds to the casualty list. The fact that the interest of the Turkish-Russian Syrian coalition, especially the Turkish aspect, of destroying the Kurdish fighters in the area exists is something that needs to be factored into this level of destruction. Erdogan has commented that he anticipates destroying what he calls the military nests of the Kurdish fighters. He sees those fighters as a threat to his own regime. So there are multiple levels of why things are happening as they are. And each of them has to be factored into the unhappy results. And each of them has to be answered. And to stop this destruction, to get to a point of stabilization, which I certainly agree is a necessary precursor to getting a rebuilt and reconstructed area, one has to look at each of the factors. We have an October 15th buffer zone establishment that is part of the stimulus for this humanitarian report also. What will that result be? Will the regime in Syria allow that buffer zone to be established? It's a very wide question, and I don't know that any of us sitting in these studios can even attempt to answer. We can only speculate and hope that there is a response.
Mr. Mercurius, another AI report back in June said that the strikes may have broken international law, which of course was denied by the coalition. It looks like the issue of accountability and justice for the victims will be nothing but a ruse, as in so many cases before.
Well, can I just say one thing? If you look at the Amnesty International report, it says quite clearly there that 90% of the bombing, the airstrikes on Raqqa, were carried out by the United States Air Force. Of the remaining 10%, those were carried out by the British and French Air Forces, obviously in coalition with the United States. So certainly it was a coalition, a US-backed coalition, but overwhelmingly the bombing is carried out by the United States Air Force. Now, talk about humanitarian, the humanitarian law aspect, there are clear humanitarian law, legal positions about what you do in civilian areas. And obviously, if bombing is carried out in an indiscriminate way, and that is what Amnesty International is basically saying, that it was carried out in an indiscriminate way in Raqqa, then quite possibly humanitarian crimes work, international law crimes might have been committed. There is no interest about this. There's been barely any reporting about this in the West. Compare again with the calls at the condemnation that used to happen when similar claims were made about the Russians in Aleppo and elsewhere.
All right, thank you very much. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Many thanks to our guest journalist and political commentator, Maxine Dover, joining us from New York, and editor-in-chief of the Duran.com, Mr. Alexander Mercuris, joining us from London. And tune back same time, same place tomorrow for another edition of Press TV's Debate. Bye for now.